Hello, and welcome to Securing Sexuality, the podcast where we discuss the intersection of intimacy
and information security. I'm Wolf Gorlick.
He's a hacker, and I'm Stephanie Gorlick.
She's a sex therapist, and together we're going to discuss what safe sex looks like in a digital age. Hey, you know what? Can I admit something?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm wrong.
Again, because we're recording and I want to capture this moment for posterity.
No, I'm actually going to beep it out when I play this. But do you remember that episode we did a bit ago about Taylor Swift and deepfakes and porn? It was like 71.
That was one of my favorite episodes.
It was so much fun. And we got some good feedback. And some of the feedback was, Wolf, you said, block the edits or block the way people are typing in, because there's some like typos allowed people to create these images, and block how the images are extracted and uploaded, because I'm thinking about DLP and you mentioned social media. And they're like, oh, Wolf, you sweet summer child. There's so much better ways to solve this.
All right. Well, you've already gotten so techie, you've lost me. So I hope that there's somebody that can help me figure this out, because I just wanted to talk about Taylor Swift, man. So, where are we going with this week?
We've got Joshua Marpet on the line. Josh, how's it going?
I am good, Wolfie. How are you, sir?
I am doing so good. So I know you. You and I are both faculty on IONS. I know you've had so many opportunities to help companies, big and small, tackle AI. But for those who don't, and I'll probably forget something, you are the executive director of Guarded Risk, a firm devoted to security and compliance of law firms, insurance companies, data processors, and their clients. You're faculty on IONS with me. You're a board member of Global B-Sides and a couple other B-Sides, right?
Several of them, yes. Yes, absolutely. So, B-Sides Delaware, B-Sides DC. I'm a board member of SkyTalks, which is a DEF CON mini-con. I'm a board member of a half a dozen other conferences that I rarely, like, they just put me on the boards. It's weird, but it doesn't make me any money, or I don't really do much with them, so it's not a big deal. I started a 501c6 to help companies understand risk management, but that sort of fell apart. It's dormant right now. I advise multiple startups. I'm working with two right now, and probably going to work with a few more in the near future. And with two kids, I occasionally sleep.
Sleep is overrated.
No, sleep is wonderful. I wish I got more of it, but what are you going to do?
But now I think we need to like just add you on to the board of Securing Sexuality, the conference. Just you're one day there. You're like, oh, I guess I agreed to that.
You know, it's interesting, but I happen to be very proud of something I have done. I was on the board of B-Sides Las Vegas, and we brought Violet Blue. I'm sure you know Violet Blue.
Absolutely. Big fan.
She was rejected from a conference because of a talk she gave about drugs and sex. And I was very proud that I pushed to have her brought to B-Sides Las Vegas to give her talk there. And I managed to wrangle the job of introducing her talk. And I'm very, very proud of that. So this is actually a topic that's near and dear to my heart and has been for many, many years. I think it's something that goes right along with security, to be very honest with you. It is a measure of communication. It is a measure of consent. It is a measure of understanding, sometimes very interesting situations that are outside the boundaries of normal or what we term as normal behavior or perceive as normal behavior. And that's a whole conversation to have all on its own. Okay. and yet it is one of the most stigmatized things that people do, just like breaking into banks legally. So it's kind of fun.
I mean, I make my career out of helping people parse out what's normal and what's not. So you've won me over. Let's do this.
Let's talk.
So there's this little thing called AI, or actually LLMs, large language models. We can start wherever you want to start. But one of the things that they've been abused for is creating pornographic imagery, or creating images that take celebrities and put celebrities in various positions they shouldn't be, or up to and including, child materials as well.
Let's start with the first couple of topics. They're much easier to, much more palatable. And the first couple of topics are things you're referring to deepfakes, You're referring to AIs, image generation AIs that are building pornographic images. There are several AIs that are public on the internet that are just for pornographic images. As a matter of fact, the members of that AI sort of community hold contests to see if they can get an image that's exactly to this standard or the most insane image they can think of, or various different contests. There are ways to get around the security features of some of the public AIs to get image generation AIs to get pornographic imagery. And then there are ways to get around the security standards of the text AIs to get pornographic stories. Okay. So which of those is acceptable and which of those isn't? Is any of that acceptable? Now, mind you, we're not talking about the child material. Leave that aside for the moment. But is an image acceptable and a story isn't, or vice versa? Is neither acceptable as both? I mean, you have a consenting AI. That was kind of a joke, but you get the idea.
I mean, we've had philosophers on to talk about whether or not robots can consent. So I'm not going to lie, I've kind of lost any sense of the idea of humor or sarcasm when it comes to what are we asking robots to consent to and when do we not need to ask them anymore? Because these are real life scenarios now. Like, honestly, until you said that, it had never occurred to me that we might need AI's consent to tell or write a dirty story. But the idea that we would need a human being's consent in order to create fake porn of them makes perfect sense to me. So how are people drawing those lines?
They're not. I mean, let's be honest. There are websites right now that look for celebrity porn in the movies, you know, when boobs are shown or ass is shown or whatever, full frontal in some cases. In a movie, as part of the movie, and they extract that scene. There's people that will put it in Photoshop and raise the lighting artificially so that you can see what was tastefully hidden by darkness. Well, it's not tastefully hidden anymore. And is that legit? And the answer is they're putting themselves on film. Metaphorically, it's digital now, but you get the idea. Is that legitimate? I don't think so. It feels wrong, but I don't know that I have a cogent or coherent argument against that kind of thing. Okay. I don't know. Wolf, what do you think? Let's ask him.
Oh, I have no idea what's right or wrong anymore. But I know that, like, when you're on the movie set, the performers are actually negotiating that. Like, what is tastefully going to be hidden by right. darkness? What is the things that I'm wearing? And Stephanie, what is that called again? There's like a
intimacy
whole
intimacy coordinator.
Intimacy coordinator. Yeah.
I actually studied this a bit.
We do intimacy coordinator training later this year.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. There's a couple of them on TikTok. I'll see if I can find them. I'll send the questions they raise are out of this world cool. You know, you're not comfortable doing that? How do we simulate that effectively? Or what do you wear during this? And I'm like, wow, that's so cool. I never thought of it. You know, it's neat.
It really is. I don't actually want to do necessarily intimacy coordination work, but I think that the negotiation skills that you're talking about and the language that that profession is creating around sex is something that is so useful to me as a sex therapist. And right. Especially as I'm doing more expert witness work and helping people really wrap their heads around what negotiation looks like in these sort of contexts. So yeah, it's on my to-do to train as an intimacy coordinator later this year.
Nice. Yeah, negotiation is implicit in every relationship, whether you're straight, gay, poly, queer in some form or fashion, whatever. If you're not negotiating with your partner, you're not doing it right. Okay. And it's part of communication. Oh my God, communication is important in a relationship. Who would have thunk that? Okay. And so do we have a duty, a right, a need to communicate with the person whose porn we're deepfaking, with the robot who we're asking to deepfake it, with the recipient who we're saying, take a look at this? You know, like is there a negotiation or a communication there? Typically in the past, in internet-based archives of you know, crap, now I'm having a brain fart. Not FNET, the old archives. Wolf, when you'd go to vampires.byte.flunk.flunk.flunk or whatever, what was that? the binaries, alt.binaries.
Usenet.
Usenet. Thank you. Brain. Sorry. You know, Usenet, you'd literally, there were subgroups in Usenet that were full of nothing but porn. Okay. And this was back when people used dial-up. Like, it would take you 10 minutes to download that piece of basically effectively to the person at that end. It's a piece of meat that you're downloading. Okay. Because you're downloading image after image after image after image for, you know, and it's like, okay, that's a bit weird. All right. And is it the same as buying a Playboy? Look, this is a philosophical discussion. Now let's get back to the technology. So I don't even know. But this is something that's been interesting and I've been thinking about recently, and it's an ongoing thing. Part of the problem is that I have people that come and talk to me because for whatever reason, I'm seen as one of the father figures of InfoSec. And so I've probably not very professionally helped people understand some things about themselves and about their relationships. I'm one of the most vanilla people you'll ever meet. My wife and I have two kids and we're living the middle class life, you know, with our house in the suburbs and all that kind of crap. But I've talked to and have great conversations with multiple polycules that are, you know, and they're like, why are we having this problem? I'm like, did you talk to each other about it? No, maybe that's a problem. And, but it's fascinating how similar all of these issues are of every relationship, of every stripe, of every person, and it all boils down to communication and trust and honesty and honor and discussion.
But I feel, you know, first off, I love the idea that all these polycules want you. That's what I heard. That was my takeaway of this. But if someone is working with the intimacy coordinator, and negotiating where they're comfortable with or whatnot to get on screen. At least they've had that negotiation. They've had that consent. Now, we can talk about like some of that consent negotiation gets removed if you've photo-manipulated the result. But at least that conversation has happened. Similar to if models are posing for photos. I know we've had, you know, conversations with producers of that content saying that sometimes those negotiations are very clear and sometimes those boundaries can be very fuzzy, but at least there is the opportunity to consent. But by the time we get to, I'm going to ask one of these image manipulation tools to create a picture of Josh Marpet and his 16 polycules. That's going to be the cover art of this episode. But by the time we get to that, right, like you as the human subject do not have the opportunity to be engaged in that consent or have thoughtful communication back to the art form or the medium, which is producing the content.
Truth. But then on the other hand, if somebody very carefully did a watercolor of you know, Wolf and his 16 polycules, are they asking for your consent to do that? But would anybody deny that it's potentially art? So there's a question of, is it art? And does art transcend that desire or that need of consent? And it doesn't transcend. But I mean, there's a lot of discussions around this. And by the way, now we're going to switch over to the nasty stuff. Okay. I was actually, I saw an article very recently about, good Lord, what's her name? Brooke Shields. Any familiar with the photo set that is very controversial about her?
Yeah, she was allowed by her mother to pose for, you know what? I'm not even going to say allowed because that implies that she had a choice in that.
She didn't.
She was, Playboy was allowed to photograph Brooke Shields at 10 for a full, traditional Playboy photo shoot spread. So Brooke Shields was really, and she's very well known as a victim of child exploitation. There was a lot of her early work that her mother signed off on that as an adult, she has said she would never have wanted to do. But
respectfully.
Yes, absolutely. And those Playboy images have been legally defined as art and not as child exploitation.
Right. She actually went to court to get them pulled from everywhere. And the court said, nope, your mom signed off. Therefore, they're art. And that's just horrifying. Okay.
Sure how that makes legal sense, because if any other parent were to create exploitative materials of their child, the fact that it was allowed by the parent would not make that art. It would still be, frankly, most child exploitation happens within the family system, and it's never held up as art. It is prosecuted.
Yep. So then the question is, since in traditional media, we've already defined some child exploitative materials art, what do we do about stuff that's procedurally generated, code generated, and doesn't show any specific child, just shows generic child, if you will? Is that illegal? Now, my response is yes. But in reality, I don't know what the law says. Okay? That's a horrifying question, and one I don't ever want to, like, just nasty. Irrespectively, how do we stop that from happening on a technical level is a whole different question. Okay? But I wanted to point out, that's why I brought this up, that there actually is a real life example of that in the past, far before AIs and LLMs ever came out.
I will say on the legal side, around the time we're recording this in 2024, and I still can't believe it's 2024, the European Union is actually working through criminalizing AI-generated content of children. So there is laws coming. And as we all know, like, the EU does it, and then maybe a decade later, US catches up. So
you are so optimistic.
I get that a lot.
So
actually, the opposite was true in the US. We actually tried to head this off in the late 90s. We passed the Child Pornography Prevention Act in 1996. And in 2002, the Supreme Court struck it down. The provisions that criminalized virtual child exploitation material, which included computer-generated images, because they were computer-generated. And they said that because no children were harmed in the production, that production qualified as free speech. So the EU, 20 years later, is actually ahead of where we were 20 years ago, where we said, as long as it's virtual, apparently it's legal.
No comment. Horrified, but no comment.
Yeah.
But hey, like I said, we were going to keep it non-technical for a little while, Steph. So, but here's the thing. Assume that I have an AI that does image generation, and assume I'm selling time on it. You know, you want to generate illustrations for your book? No problem. Go for it. You want to generate images about, you know, for a poem you're writing for your fiance? Great. Go to town. Okay. You want to generate child sexual abuse material? What the hell is wrong with you? But how do I stop that? Because let's be honest. Like, there are plenty of people that look younger, okay? There's actually a court case about that. There was a guy that traveled back from Brazil, I think, South America somewhere, and had a DVD in his luggage, and they prosecuted him for child abuse or child abuse material. And the star of that DVD had to show up in court and say, no, here's my ID. I'm 22 or whatever she was. She was legal. And they went, you're joking. Like, they had a pediatrician examine the recording. That, like, they went and they did the right stuff. So, okay, that's awkward. And then there's the fact that, yes, it's procedurally generated. And then there's the fact that, you know, like, one of my exes, swear to God, she looked 16 in her 30s. Okay. But anyway, it's tough. Okay. So how do you deal with that? And by the way, what is child sexual abuse material? I have an 18-month-old baby. Okay. There are plenty of pictures of me holding her. And you can just see the top of her butt or whatever, you know, because she's wearing diapers. They sag. Is that CSAM? you know? But if I had a system that shuts, it's a small child and there's any kind of skin of any kind, shut it down. What about if it's just her face? You know, I'm holding her so she's facing forward and you can see her face and she's smiling. Like it's really hard, okay, to determine what is CSAM from skin color or you know, that there's skin showing or whatever. It's from various things. It's not as easy as it seems. And, you know, how many pictures are of you when you were a tiny child that you were in a bathtub or in a play pool out in the front yard or whatever? Do you know what I mean?
No, I grew up Gen X. We had no photos of us. I entered the scene around 12. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, actually, so did I. And my wife often asks, like, why aren't there no pictures of you when you were a kid? I'm like, there just weren't.
That wasn't a thing our parents really did much. But you get to the point that I was alluding to when we were talking about this in the previous episode, which was you can have good input filtering, like don't use these words.
Right.
Don't request these things. But the history of computer hacking is finding ways around those filters. We have a long history of subverting. And I think that what I heard was the Taylor Swift one was made possible because they misspelled Taylor. So it got through the filter. And then the LLM went, oh, you must mean Taylor Swift, Taylor. And so we've got problems on the filter side, which we can enact some guardrails, but they're not going to be great. And we got problems on the export side, because think about every DLP and image recognition tool ever, which to your point has usually a lot of false positives.
And by the way, even if it's not false positives, I mean, have you ever seen safe for work porn? This is not a joke. If you go to YouTube and YouTube, you know, YouTube search safe for work porn, there is a porn or a compilation of porn that somebody took and changed into safe for work. So they have like eating an ear of corn instead of, okay, they have pumping quarters furiously into a pinball machine rather than, okay, riding a horse.
Pinball machines are very sexy, though. I mean, those were like the original, illicit technology.
But
wow, I did not know about this.
Is it something that it's very old? Like it's probably 20 years old at this point. Jesus, I'm old. But like, is it something that is? Could you say, oh, this is totally not porn? No, it's absolutely. But you can absolutely. But if you said, you know, Taylor Swift riding a horse, Lady Godiva style, which means naked, just to be clear, down a bumpy road, could you then photo edit it to take the horse out? Or something like, I'm making this up on the fly, but do you get the idea? Like, is it possible to make things close enough? Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So we're not going to stop it. And we're not going to filter it.
There's another item that I want to throw into this mix, because this was brought up on a previous conversation we had, which is, you know, with advertising, right? Certain content cannot be advertised by Facebook or Instagram. It's blocked.
Right.
So, you know, they show a picture of a cactus instead of something else. And they allude to buy these pills in here. What this person was alluding to was the choices that we make by the filters also create conditions where people may not see themselves recognized or see themselves reflected. They may not feel accepted. She was using the example of she could ask for a lot of male parts, but anytime she asked for a female part, even if it's like it's for a textbook, the app would shut it down. Like, you know, OpenAI would be like, nope, can't do that. And so there's also, I think we need to acknowledge that our own biases and our own beliefs in what's normal and what's not also get reflected and coded in these filters.
Yeah. What if your staff is racist? maybe you can show all black porn, you know, African-American porn, but you can't show any white porn. Okay. Or generate it rather. Maybe you can, you know, there's racism, sexism, ageism, any ism you can think of could be reflected in those filters and embodied in those filters. Oh, wow. That was an interesting choice of terms, but, excuse me. But I mean, the problem is that, you know, it's like the old saying, whenever you make something foolproof, God makes a better fool. And yes. If you build a filter, sorry, go ahead, Steph.
I've never heard that before. And I was just saying, I love that. That is a brilliant statement.
It's ancient. I don't even know how old that my grandfather told that to me, I think. And my dad used to tell it to me all the time. So, I mean, like, as far as I know, that's 100 years old. Feel free to steal it. It's all yours. But it's literally, if you make something that's perfect, yeah, you're somebody's going to come around, figure out a way around it. I mean, let me give you an example of filtering gone wrong. A good friend of mine would tell this story. And if he hears this, he'll recognize himself. But he was on a pen test and his team was working around the deny list that the defense team had in place on their WAF, their web application firewall. Okay. This is basically a way to keep people out if they're trying to do certain things. Okay, Stephanie? And they couldn't get around it. Like, this is really good. So he got on a plane, flew out to their data center, social engineered his way into the data center, pulled the WAF out of the rack, cabled across it, and flew home. And he went to the report meeting, and they're like, how was the deny list? How was the WAF? And he's like, it was good. We had a problem with it. They're like, yeah, you couldn't get past it. He goes, no, we could get past it. Here's your WAF. And they went, what? He's like, we couldn't get past it. So I stole the WAF. They're like, how? With So then we were able to get past. Then we had no problem getting here. Here's your domain admin. Here's all your stuff. And they're like, oh, dear God. So no matter what you do, somebody's going to figure out a way. I mean, let's be honest. You know Hugging Face?
No. What's Hugging Face?
Oh. Open up a browser. Go to huggingface.co. It's just huggingface.co, not com, co. It's nothing horrible. It's a forum for AI enthusiasts to trade AIs. They trade models, they trade data sets, they trade everything. But if you go to models at the very top, there's a button that marked models, click that. On the left, you'll see a list of tasks that AIs can do. One of them is image generation and text to image. You can build your own in minutes. So I don't care what you set up as filters. I'll just build my own.
I'm looking at it right now, and the scariest thing for me is text to video. So we've reached the age where I really can't believe my own eyes if what I'm looking at is on my computer screen or on my cell phone.
In security, we've already started doing this, whereas we're taking all human factors out of authentication. If your CEO loses his cell phone or her cell phone on a trip, guess what? You don't get a cell phone until you show up at an office in person. Yeah, but you know who I am. I don't care. You don't get a new cell phone until you show up in person. Just the other day, a week, there was the one person that had a Zoom call with four or five of their C-level board members who instructed them to make a $25 million deposit. They were all deepfakes, live. And he made a $25 million deposit into an account that he'd never touched before. And guess what? They were not real. They were all deepfakes. So you literally, until I see you in person, it's not real, which means that, hey, I recognize, I'm on the help desk. I recognize his voice. No, you don't. I can see her on the Zoom call. No, you can't. Yes, you're absolutely correct. As a matter of fact, if you want to go back to YouTube, look up Adobe Voco, V-O-C-O. Okay, Adobe space Voco. You will see a product launch video about a system that Adobe built where you could feed in about 20 minutes of audio material. And then you could type whatever you wanted, and that speaker would say it. So I would feed in 20 minutes of Wolf speaking, and then I could type, you know, hi, Steph, how are you? And it would say in Wolf's voice, perfect inflection and everything, hey, Steph, how are you? Okay? And that they never released that product because the backlash was so bad. That, by the way, is from 2015 or 2016. So now you see how long this has been going on.
Wow. So how does this impact, like we've talked about the icky things from my world. And I don't want to spend too much time on those because, frankly, I love our listeners and none of them want to spend an hour listening to us talk about CSAM. That is the best way to...
I'm okay with that.
But I can think of so many other problematic areas, right? Like, we're heading into an election year. How does anybody know what news is real anymore? How does anybody know what information they should believe? I mean, short of going back to the town crier where the people that saw it with their own two eyes told the guy to go and yell up and down the block that the goats are running loose, how do we actually communicate news now and trust it?
We don't. It's quite literally, it's that bad. It is literally to the point where if it doesn't come from a reputable source who is double checking and fact checking and checking with the appropriate people, you can't trust it. And the problem is that that kind of news, that kind of investigative journalism, that kind of proper journalism costs this magic stuff called money. And, you know, you guys are doing this, for example, as a passion project. You guys, you two are doing this as something that's appropriate and relevant to the two of your interests and loves and cares. And it's useful, but realistically, this is a passion project. And eventually you may get sponsorship. You may have it already. I don't know. I apologize. You should call Bad Dragon. But you don't need money to do this, but it costs you money to do it. And time and money. Time is money. And for somebody to do investigative journalism on a proper fashion, they actually have to, they need quite a lot of money. And so who's going to do that? Because the only people we're getting news from, other than comedians who are better newscasters than most newscasters these days, and they're getting their money from jokes and ads and everything else, are people like, you know, Fox, who are getting their money from other places. Okay. Who may be politically biased?
No, never. But
don't
you're
get me started.
You know, back to the LLMs for a minute. This is the other thing that's happening, right? Is so many of these news stories now are just being cranked out by one of these, you know, text chat bots. And we both know friends who were reporters who got out of that industry into our industry. Because there was no money. Everyone was getting laid off. Everyone was getting let go. And so not only do you not have the money to do investigative journalism, but a lot of the good journalists have already left. And a lot of the content out there is being parroted off of these models.
I mean, somebody did a YouTube of it not long ago where they showed 50 different news channels and they were all parroting the exact same lines. Because they're fed their stories from a consolidated news source, and they read them word for word. And they've been buying up news stations, and they've been buying up radio stations, and they've been buying up all these stations. And coincidentally, maybe they have a political agenda. Maybe not. Of course, they're totally perfect. But, you know, I'm just saying it's possible. But they've gutted the field of journalism. There was a joke on Reddit, literally, I think today, where was a picture of Walter Cronkite. And it said underneath, do you believe this, kids? This was a guy that read the news. He didn't tell us how to think. He didn't tell us what to think. He just read the news as it happened, and then he shut up and got off the air. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's Cronkite. Like, what's, and there was Jennings, and there was Rather, and there, you know, and like, and it was like, oh, wow, that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, but with Adobe Vocal, we could bring him back.
I hit you so hard.
It's interesting, and I promise, going to sound like I'm derailing, but I'm not. It's interesting that you bring up Bad Dragon, Josh, because we don't have advertisers, and we don't do that for a couple reasons. Partly because we talk about, you know, sex tech and products, and I don't ever want people to think that what we're saying is informed by money. So we have self-funded this whole thing. It is a hobby for us. It is a passion for us. But it's funny that you specifically reference Bad Dragon because my kid, my child, the fruit of my limb. No, that's not how that goes.
Loins.
Yeah. I care about my loins.
Wolf is good with them, but you know.
My child was like, Bad Dragon should sponsor your conference. and my child was reaching out to Bad Dragon. I don't think they ever responded to him. So, you know, Bad Dragon, if you're out there, hi. But you saying that made me think about my kid, because my kid's in his early 20s and completely cynical and jaded and is just beyond the idea of truth and reality. Like, he is, and his friends are completely nihilistic, because what's the point? You can't believe anything. Nothing's true. Nothing's real. There's no sort of fixed point of fact or agreed upon objective reality these days. You can't believe what your eyes and ears are telling you. You can't know that your best friend on Instagram is even real and not a bot in a North Korean like troll farm.
Bot farm, yeah.
So there's this whole generation of kids that have just like given up on the idea of caring, because how can you care about what you can't trust?
I take it one step farther. How many of them will be able to afford a house when they become of age? How many of them will be able to afford a starter house or a family house? How many of them will be able to afford a car, a house, a job, a yearly vacation to Europe, whatever, you know, or even to Disney World? I mean, God, Disney World is like $8,000 to $10,000 a trip now for a family. Like, that's crazy. Okay. And so now you see, and I know we've gone far afield and I apologize, but I mean, and you have to understand one thing else about me. I'm very liberal, except I'm also, I'm an ex-cop, but I'm a pro 2A person, okay, Second Amendment person. And I'm not pro 2A unilaterally or universally, let's be clear. But the point is now you wonder why people go on, well, shooting rampages. It's because there is literally nothing left. And they, you know, and I'm not parroting mental health care. I mean, that's bloody important, don't get me wrong. But it's literally because there's no career path, there's no American dream, there's nothing for them to do. When you just don't care because you don't know what's real, what does it matter?
So we watched The Stepford Wives, the 1970s film. Oof. And we were just having a conversation about that. And he was also like, you guys like this? The acting is terrible. But at one point in time, he was talking about the houses. And he's like, you know, they don't seem to have a very fancy job to get that house. I said, well, pick one of the houses. And he pointed at one of them. I said, all right, so at the time, that was a $25,000 house. He's like, that was a $25,000 house. It's like, that house was the price of my car. This is not fair. He just started ranting because he's like, what happened to housing and everything? I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, you used to be able to get a house for middle-class income.
No, remember, that minimum wage back then was $3, you know, $4, whatever it was. But on the other hand, minimum wage has gone up maybe 50%. Even if you say it's gone up 100%, the housing prices and tuition prices, student loan, and car prices have gone up a hell of a lot more than that. When I saw a friend of mine got an F-150 pickup and paid close to $100,000 for his car, and I just, the hell? That's a price of a house. He looked at me funny. He's like, no, it's not. Oh, God, you're right. You know, but, you know, my parents bought a house when I was 12, 13, somewhere in there. And they paid significantly less than I paid for my house here in Pennsylvania. And they got a lot more for the money. A lot more for the money. We have a lovely house. Don't get me wrong. We have almost 3/4 of an acre of land. Okay. They have 6. There's a difference. You know what I mean? And in New Jersey as well, which is, you know. Anyway, wow, have we gone far afield? I'm terribly sorry.
No, you're fine. It seems really unfair that, you know, you could create fake porn of me tomorrow, and Wolf could AI generate my voice to fake out, I don't know, my clients, and somebody else could create fake videos of Wolf and I giving a talk. But we can't just, like, why can't AI make us a house yet? Like, why are none of these technologies being put to practical use?
You want the honest answer?
Yeah.
Because you're not rich enough to matter.
Yeah.
And I don't mean any offense by that. Please don't make an... I'm not either.
No.
But you're not rich enough to matter. The people that control significant amounts of these technologies. Now, can we do it hobbyist? Absolutely. Can I build a 3D printer that will build me a house? Yes. Will it pass code? Maybe. Okay.
Well, your point about code, I want to jump on, because one of the things I was, and I'm not going to bore the audience here, but if anyone wants to get me pull me aside at a conference and give me some drinks, I will tell you this. I was looking at earthquakes and building codes and how they developed until we finally had a consistent code where a building could survive an earthquake. And I was plotting that timeline across software bill materials and all the problems that have happened along the lines of bad software code now, not building codes that we continue to write again and again. And so, you know, clearly we are, according to my timeline of that, pretty far away from having any building codes type instruction about here's how you manage a AI model. Here's how you build AI models so they're safe. But I know you are brought in all the time to talk to, you know, Fortune 500 companies who are very concerned about AI and ML. What can we do to help nudge these to be safer?
You know, it's interesting you say that about building codes, because I need to give you a tiny bit of background. My father is an expert witness on building codes, slip, trips, and falls. He's one of the top tribologists in the world, which is the friction. So if you want to talk friction, he knows more than just about anybody else in the world. It's scary. I spent much of my childhood getting paid, you know, a pittance to run a friction testing machine, but that was my allowance, damn it, and it worked. So I've literally tested more flooring types. I've thrown dummies into the paths of subway trains. I've done all sorts of weird stuff. But building codes, I grew up surrounded by sets of building codes. Boca Basic Building Code, 1950s, 1960s, et cetera. 1800s, he has. He has some very rare books. And so if you ever need to talk that, yell, I'll put you in touch with my dad. You guys can chat for hours. It'd be kind of fun.
I am taking you up on that. That's
not a problem.
Fantastic.
Not a problem. You just have to come out for the barbecue. Okay. You both have to come out.
You're killing me. We have already had Wolf give talks on food production, on toasters, on Universal Movie Monsters. He is going to end up doing an entire friction-themed cybersecurity talk, and I'm going to be the one that has to listen to him practice.
There'll be barbecue.
But in all seriousness, when you talk about plotting it against S-bombs and everything, you should also talk to Sergey Bratis. Do you know Sergey?
Off the top of my head, it's not ringing a bell.
So I just interviewed him the other night on Pulse Security Weekly, the podcast I'm on. And I meaning all of us did, and not just me.
Sure.
And it's fascinating because he says that malware is on the verge of developing a language that is consistent and coherent. In other words, instead of finding vulnerabilities as a, oh, look, this is interesting, and look, there's a hole in it, vulnerability, it's, I wish to design a vulnerability for this class of events, and I can create where vulnerabilities should be based on my understanding of the entire class. Okay? So instead of a bespoke vulnerability because of a casual found encounter or an encounter, it is, I know where there's going to be vulnerabilities because I understand everything about this. There's going to be a language of vulnerabilities, a language of malware. And it's fascinating talking to him about that.
And terrifying.
Absolutely terrifying, because the obverse of that is that we have nothing resembling that for cybersecurity. Nothing. Hell, you talk to 4 dozen pen testers and ask them the definition of pen test, you'll get 4 dozen different answers. Okay? You talk to incident responders and ask them for what do they do to stop the bleeding, and you get 20 different checklists. Okay? We're screwed. Okay? Which is why one of the things I'm doing is trying to define pen test as a beginning sort of vernacular or terminology. I'm actually honestly thinking about starting to write some articles about terminology so that we can start getting definitions. Okay, because if we don't have apples to apples definitions so that we can talk in a similar language, even if it is English or Hebrew or whatever, but if we don't have apples to apples definitions, how the bloody hell can we ever expect to get anywhere? Okay. Now, sorry, one of my rants. I apologize. But you've got a situation where we have LLMs doing porn. You've got a situation where we have bad actors doing all sorts of god-awful things. Okay, they're already using deepfakes right now with AI assistance to steal money from parents and grandparents. Steph, you're getting a phone call at 3 a.m. Mom, mom, I'm in jail in Spain. Send $1,000 to this wire address. Okay, and it's your kid's voice. And their voice is accurate, believable, understandable. It's them. You know it. It's them. But it's not. Okay? The other, by the way, the other variant of that is, Mom, there's a gun to my head. Send money to him now or he's going to kill me. Holy God. Okay? Those are deepfakes. Now, what do I mean about AI assistance? Deepfakes and AI are not the same thing, by the way, just to be clear. Okay? AI can produce video deepfakes or image deepfakes or even audio deepfakes, but it is not the same thing. Okay? So what am I talking about AI assisted? Well, AI just scanned all of social media and found your kid's Instagram posts, harvested all of the audio and video out of them, stuffed it into the deepfake generator, because found out as well that your kid, stupidly, said, I'm going to Spain tomorrow. 3 days later, boom, scam initiated. Okay, by the way, why did I pick Spain? Trivia question, Wolf, do you know?
It's the Spanish scam was what it was originally, right?
The Spanish prisoner.
Yes, the Spanish prisoner scam, the classic scam that led to all this.
Do you know how classic it is, Steph? It started in the Crusades.
Oh, wow.
Not a joke. During the Crusades, there would be a knight who would be captured and or their letters, which were kept close to their heart, were pulled off a dead body and read. And then somebody would write a letter trying to imitate their style, saying, I'm in prison in Spain. Send £1,000 by courier. Like, it's still going on. Sorry. I love history lessons like that.
No, so do I. I'm usually the one rambling about sex history, but I think that's actually a really important thing to share, because in my world, a lot of people get super overwhelmed by the technology piece. I mean, I always say, you know, my job here is to be the tech adjacent one and to kind of be the voice of the person that's like, can you please define LLM for me? And that's my job here. But that's also because that's my world and that's my people. Like, we think about technology as very, very new. And we think about these processes and these experiences as being very, very new. And a lot of people get really overwhelmed by trying to keep up on all the newness. So I think that even though it might be happening in a different form, hearing that this is something that's been going on since the Crusades actually makes it feel a little bit more learnable for a lot of people. All of a sudden, it's something that isn't the scary unknown thing. It's just a new version of something that's been happening for a long time. And all of a sudden, that feels more manageable.
Well, hell, do you know what people said Bitcoin was? And all of the cryptocurrency? What's that? I'm sorry?
Chuck E. Cheese token?
No. They said Bitcoin is a great way so we can speed run through all of the scams of the 18 and 1900s.
Fair. I can
Perfect.
See that.
Perfect.
I mean, and it's literally the way these things work. And AI, we're going to speed run through all of the sex scandals of the 1950s all the way through the 2010s or whatever. And we're going to see AI porn that's generated of specific people. We're going to see AI porn that's generated of specific racial groups. We're going to see AI porn that's generated of specific everything. We're not going to see, and just the same way that we had Girls Gone Wild in the 90s and 2000s, right? Remember that?
Yeah.
And I used to bounce on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. So I remember seeing the photographers in the early 2000s down there. Okay. It was horrifyingly weird, let me tell you. But, you know, the we're going to see AI generated porn for specific request groups. We're going to see a group that's going to pay $20 a month so that they can get brand new AI generated porn every day of XYZ, whatever is their fancy. Okay. We're also going to see groups that are much more hidden, if they're smart, which they're not, which is going to pay a lot of more money for CSAM material. Okay. And so, like, just the same way that they in Usenet, thank you for the word again, Wolf. I couldn't remember for the life of me. We're going to see it segregated by what's interesting. You like blondes, brunettes, male on male, ahegao, yaoi. I can never pronounce these things right. Forgive me. Whatever. You'll see the exact same thing. Okay. And to be honest, because the other problem these days is the dating scene is so god awful, according to all of my friends that are dating, they can't find a decent partner to save their, you know, for love or money, basically. Ha ha ha. We're going to see a lot more of these happening and in such ways. And I honestly, I've been wondering when we're going to start seeing the Japanese thing, hikikimori. You familiar with that?
Those are the guys that are just kind of opting out of relationships entirely. They are only having sort of virtual relationships, if at all.
If at all. And some of them are the ones that are withdrawn. I think it's the same term, but they withdraw from society entirely. And then we have the ones like, we're going to repeat all of these things from the 1960s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, everything from free love all the way up to who the hell knows what's real anymore, but it's going to speed run through it the next 2 or 3 years.
And it's interesting, you know, kind of bringing things back to the Taylor Swift question that instigated this conversation. It's interesting, the idea that, you know, AI is speed racing through the 50s, because some of the most famous photos of Marilyn Monroe, coming back to Playboy, Marilyn Monroe's Playboy spread was not consensual. Hugh Hefner bought those photographs from a photographer that hired her as an artist model before she became a name.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And when she made it big, he put her on the cover without her consent.
Wow.
So we are really and truly just replicating old problems in new ways.
It's a lot of problems, and I don't see any solutions in sight. And if we try to stop all porn, it gets ugly really fast, and it doesn't work. If we try to stop child porn, we can stop child porn, but there's a cost to that. Anybody that looks young can't have their pornographic pictures anywhere. That's awkward. And then we have, 2257? I forget the we're all porn actors and actresses have to have their age registered. You know, it has to be available to the law enforcement should they want to come by and see it, blah, blah, blah. And that's cool. I'm good with that. That makes total sense to me. And there's a lot of porn, really good porn houses that actually film the consent sessions. These are the things we're going to be doing. And these are the things we're going to be happen to you and to everybody else. And are you okay with that? If you have any problems with that, tell us now. You know, and there's actually a court case on that. There was a porn actress who went through a filmed consent session. Absolutely no problem. And then after 6 years, they did things to me without my consent. It's literally a filmed consent session. Okay.
Which is both part of why, circling all the way back to the beginning, intimacy coordinators are so important, not just in Hollywood, but in pornography.
Right.
And also why consent education is so important, because that makes perfect sense to me. You can say up front, I am totally down for this, and midstream realize you're not feeling it that way, or the fantasy does not align with the there are any number of reasons why somebody might revoke consent in the middle of something.
Yeah.
And to then point at a video and go, oh, well, you know, you said up front it was fine. Now that might meet a legal threshold. But we need to be teaching ongoing, enthusiastic, affirmative consent.
Yeah, absolutely agreed.
So I get to be the bad guy who does the time check. we're at time. I'm gonna ask you one final question, Josh.
Go for it.
And Stephanie, I'll let you have the final word, then we'll do the outro. Josh, don't go anywhere, because you mentioned Hebrew, and I want to talk to you about something before we wrap. But I know, Stephanie, you and I got that thing at 5:30 Eastern, so we got to. What's my final question? Well, you know, a lot of the I had one. I was in the moment.
Okay. Do it.
You know, it is good to hear a lot of the things we talk about: consent, communication, awareness. Have a place in this, even when we're talking about LLMs, even when we're talking about emerging technology around the AI space. Is there any other, like, hey, you should think about this, you should be aware of this, you should be, you know, looking for this? Any other guidance that you can give people, Josh, to protect themselves as we speed run through all the crimes in the next couple of years?
For your family, have a code word. Have a couple of them. Have a code word for everything is fine, mom, and a code word for everything is not fine, mom. Okay. For business, no, don't use any human factors and authentication resets. For news, check out your news sources and find out who owns them and figure out who you believe, because it's going to be really important in time to come. And I have several, and weirdly enough, many of them are comedians these days. That's the scary thing. But they do better news than most news stories these days. And so that's my sort of minuscule pieces of advice for various aspects of this.
I love that you say have a code word, because, you know, we keep throwing back to examples from history. And I remember sitting in my kindergarten class and telling my friend that my mom told me that if anybody ever came to pick me up and said, your mom told me to come and get you, if they didn't say the word watermelon, I shouldn't go with them. And so a lot of these sort of like basic safety things that we used to teach kids back in the early days of the internet, or even before the internet, are just as useful as they were then. And I think that is really my biggest takeaway from this is, you know, thinking about things like stolen letters in the Crusades, or stolen pictures in Playboy, or safe words in kindergarten. Oh, wait, safe words, that's probably not the right term to use, but passwords in kindergarten. You know, all of those things make this really overwhelming, kind of nihilistic, no real solutions yet conversation, if not more hopeful, at least a little bit more manageable for me. And I hope for the other me-like people listening to this. And so I want to thank you for that, right? Like, if this is a hard conversation to have, because there aren't any good answers yet. And that can feel really scary, and that can feel really overwhelming. And I will be the therapist in the room and just say that those feelings are valid. But we can look to history to teach us how to navigate the future. And that is something I hadn't really thought about before having a chat with you today. So thank you for that, Josh.
Pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much for tuning into Securing Sexuality, your source of information you need to protect yourself, your relationships, and anything going on in Spain.
Securing Sexuality is brought to you by the Bound Together Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. From the bedroom to the cloud, we're here to help you navigate what safe sex looks like in a digital age.
Be sure to check out our website, securingsexuality.com, for links to more information about the topics we discussed here today. I think we might have set a record for most links captured in a conversation. So there will be a lot of references in that. Go check that out, as well as information about our live events.
All of which are both safe for work and safe for life. None of the links are going to go to any of the scary stuff that we talked about today, because we want you to be able to join us again next week for more fascinating conversations about the intersection of sexuality and technology. Be safe, come up with a password, and have a great week.